Wake up with the news and information you can trust. Starting your day the right way with the Andy Griffin Show. This is News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU.
It's a Tuesday morning. I'm Andy Griffin. Thank you for tuning in to the Andy Griffin Show today. We try to put a positive spin on what is oftentimes a negative world. Stockton is with me today. We have a guest perhaps coming today if he can get here. But we'll cross that bridge if we come to it. Stockton, you doing all right,
man? Yes, I am. How are you?
I'm doing okay, man. I mean, life is good, right? I am planning on tonight, going to the Reagan movie.
Oh, very nice.
I'm a big Reagan fan. I had an opportunity. I would say I liked Reagan, but I wouldn't have put myself in the fan category until I went to the Reagan Presidential Library in California. And reading about his life and learning about his attitudes and the way he... And I knew stuff, but I didn't know details. And just finding out, I mean, I felt a kinship because he wanted to be a sportscaster when he was young. And I wanted to be a sportscaster, and I was, and he was for a while as well. He parlayed that into an acting career, which
right.
You can relate to, I'm sure, with acting. And then he parlayed that somehow into becoming a congressman and then the president of the United States. And some say, certainly conservatives, a lot of them say the best president that ever served in our country. So... I want to see. I heard Dennis Quaid does a fantastic job of portraying Ronald Reagan in the movie. I have read some things that said you feel like they didn't quite capture all of who Reagan was, but I'll find out in person, I guess.
So it's funny you say that. My sister actually went and saw. Well, so I guess there's a theater out in Hurricane, or like the Coral Cliffs Theater out in Hurricane. They do like a VIP like. Dinner and movie thing.
Wow.
Now it's like very nice. And my sister and her husband went and saw Reagan at the VIP lounge or whatever it's called. And she said it was a great film, and she said Dennis Quaid absolutely killed it. But she did also say that when you're doing like a biopic like that, a biopicture on like a political figure, that you have to cover everything. And she was saying that while it does cover a lot of like the downsides of the Reagan presidency, it's, she said that it very much focuses more on like the positive things. So you can take that as you will, which I think is something that you'll like.
So I'm a person, and I feel I like this way. I'm a person that I don't like to read reviews, before if I get a new video game, the new NCAA football that I've been playing lately, love that game. I have not read a single review. My son will come, hey, I heard this and I read this, and I don't care. I will evaluate it on my own feelings about it. And I'm kind of the same way with movies. I will glance at like a review score.
Yeah.
Because I don't want to go to a movie that's 5 out of 10 stars, right?
Oh, absolutely.
But if it's up over 6 or 7, I'm like, okay, I'll go to it, and then I'll evaluate it on whether I like it or not myself. So we recently went to Beetlejuice. And while I would not take an 8-year-old because there's a lot of gore. I mean, Beetlejuice is dead, right?
Right. Yeah. Well, and you wouldn't take an 8-year-old to the original Beetlejuice either.
Right. And so... but for an adult, and if you're going, okay, there's going to be a lot of blood and gore and you know, basically it spends about half the movie is spent in the afterworld. And, the premise is that however you died, you remain in that state in the afterworld. One of the main characters, he got, his upper half of his torso got bit off by a shark. And so I don't know what happened to the upper half of the torso, but the whole movie is the lower half of his torso with the big shark bite. I wouldn't take a kid, but you know what? It was entertaining and fun. And
I heard Michael Keaton just absolutely kills it.
Keaton,
man,
was great. He was, and it's been like 30 years since the original.
Yeah. 1986.
Ooh,
I
almost
think,
40
or
years.
Or 1987, something like that.
Yeah. So, and of course the Beetlejuice character is covered in makeup and stuff. So, it'll hide the fact that he's 40 years older.
Yeah.
But he was fantastic. He really was quite good. And of course the character, that played the goth, daughter is all grown up now.
Yep.
She was the mom in Stranger Things,
yes,
right?
Winona Ryder.
That's it, Winona Ryder. I thank you for coming up with that name. But she does a good, she plays this neurotic ghost whisperer type person who has a fractured relationship with her daughter, and her husband had been killed, and they end up reuniting with him in the afterworld for a little while.
That's cool. Nice.
Yeah. So I guess I should have said spoiler alert first, but they do find him. He had apparently been eaten by piranhas in the Amazonian jungle, or maybe in the Amazon itself, I guess. So he had little fish attached to his face everywhere.
Wonderful.
So anyway, Beetlejuice. If you are looking for a fun movie that is a little bit gory, but it's all kind of funny gory, It's I would say it's 75% comedy. The story's, it's a B story, but overall, I would say, yeah, Beetlejuice was a fun movie to go.
Would you believe me if I told you I hadn't seen the original Beetlejuice until last month?
Really?
Yeah. And while I do want to see Beetlejuice, I think I'm just going to wait till it gets on streaming.
Yeah, not a bad idea. Well, I got to go for free, so.
To take advantage. Take advantage of that.
Yeah, my wife's work it was Washington City night at the theater last week, and so we got to go for free.
Ah, that was the movie you saw. Yeah, the same day as the presidential debate.
Yes, yeah, that was my prior commitment, and I did go home and watch as much of the debate as I could. But happy wife, happy life, right? I had to go 100%. Support my wife, and I did do that. All right, there were a couple of items on the news today I thought it'd be fun to talk about a little bit. Like I said, I don't know if our guest is going to come or actually, I just got a couple of texts. Let's see. He said, I thought you meant next Tuesday.
You know what's funny? This is a great time to bring this up. We had this conversation earlier today. So the difference between saying, so if I said this Saturday, which you would say
it's coming up in four or five days.
Yes, exactly. But if I said next Saturday, then me and you were talking about this, I automatically go towards, okay, so it's essentially a week and a half from now. But I don't know why that.
It's an interesting topic, and it's something we talked about in journalism school, and I'll go over that part of it in a minute. But for now, to me, if it was, say, Friday, if today was Friday, and you said next Saturday, I'd automatically go, okay, next week.
So it needs to be, like, under a week and a half.
Yeah. Gotcha. Where we're 4 or 5 days out from Saturday, if you say next Saturday, my mind immediately goes to Saturday coming up. And maybe that's me. I don't know. But I will tell you this, in journalism school, and you learn this too, I'm sure, they say don't put it to next Saturday or stuff. Put a date on it.
Yeah.
Say, oh, yeah, on September 20, whatever.
Yeah. If it's interesting because if it's upcoming, then you want to put a date on it. But if it's close enough,
tomorrow or Saturday or whatever it is.
But if it's in broadcast, you can say tomorrow. But in writing, you can't say tomorrow because then
who knows when they're going to read it. Right?
Exactly.
Especially in today's day and age of online posting and somebody. It's interesting because we have this mantra from Art Town Square to write these two stories a day. And sometimes I'll have a story that I wrote 9 months ago get a whole bunch of hits.
Yeah.
And that's when you really become hyper aware of, okay, you better not put tomorrow or anything like that because they might read a story you wrote in March. They might not read it till September, and tomorrow would have been 6 months minus one day ago, you know. So, yeah, it kind of drives that home for sure. Okay, a couple of things that we're commenting on tonight is the super moon eclipse.
Yes.
Now, and I know some people hate, they're not really into this stuff, but I grew up in a house, we appreciate some of the cool stuff that happens at night with the stars. And anyway, the moon will be a little bit bigger than usual because it's a little bit closer, or I don't know. But anyway, it'll be a little bit bigger. And then there will be a partial eclipse tonight, too. I think it starts at like 8:13 and goes for like 40 minutes to like 8:53. So, yeah, if you're out tonight and it's not cloudy, it could be a little cloudy. It's clear right now. But if you're out tonight just after dark, within a half hour of it getting dark, the moon will be out and it'll be eclipsing. And it'll be kind of cool.
It also feels fantastic outside. I don't know if you've been out there. Just this morning alone, I was just like, oh, my gosh, I don't feel like I'm dying.
The
I feel like I can live.
By the way, the high today is supposed to be 79.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Another story came across the wire this morning. A new study from Texas A&M found that puzzles are good for your brain. It suggests older people who play word games have better memory, attention spans, and process thoughts better than those who don't do puzzles. This is Dr. Paul Kim.
The more they engage in these type of activities, the better they improve cognitive function.
He says, Dr. Kim says, it can actually beat back against Alzheimer's. Nearly 6 million people in the U.S. suffer from dementia. That number is projected to grow to, more than twice, 14 million in the next couple of decades. And so if they're finding that if you use it, maybe you won't lose it, at least not as quickly. So, if you're retired and you're out there listening, you're retired and you're going, yeah, I'm not as sharp as I used to be. You can actually get sharper still. You can teach an old dog new tricks if you keep your brain active and use it, to do. I would say, this is me extrapolating it out, but if you maybe you find some kind of, video game that you like, or maybe you find some sort of television program that makes you. I know older people like to watch Jeopardy. That's good for your brain.
Well, it's funny you said that, because as soon as you were talking about how good puzzles can be for your brain, mm-hmm. I was thinking, when I think of puzzles, I hear puzzle game, I immediately think Tetris.
Oh,
and so I was like, and then I remembered a study that I read back in 2017 when I first started college, I was like, Tetris is supposed to be good for your brain, and I looked into it, and it turns out it's really good for your brain.
Yeah.
And I tried to find the study while you were talking, and I couldn't find it, but I hope that it just made me think of just, I don't know. But at the same time, Tetris is also the most stressful thing. It's the most wonderfully stressful thing
it
ever.
It is kind of stressful. There are certain games that, ratchet up the pressure and tension and stress. And in a way, though, sometimes that makes games more attractive, right?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, if you're playing a game and you're not a little bit tense trying to beat the boss or do whatever.
Or in also going back to Tetris, there is a version of Tetris where you play Tetris against 99 other people playing Tetris at the same time as you.
Oh, wow.
And every time you clear a line, you send trash blocks over to them. And then if they don't clear it out and they lose, then it gets faster and faster and faster. It's wonderful.
So there was a game back in the day. And when I say back in the day, we were newlyweds, my wife and I. So late 80s, early 90s, called Dr. Mario.
Yes.
And Dr. Mario is kind of a Tetris clone. Only the instead of blocks, they sent down these pill capsules
mm-hmm.
with a different color, like red on the left and blue on the right of this capsule. And you had to match a certain number of colors. But the thing that I really liked about that, and my wife is not a gamer, but she would sit down and play Dr. Mario with me, because on screen you could sit there next to each other and play against each other.
Yep.
And that was actually quite fun. And it was one of the very few video games my wife ever actually got into.
So my sister, funny enough, when I grew up with a Nintendo 64, and Dr. Mario 64 let you play Dr. Mario with four people at the same time. And my sister was really, really good at Dr. Mario.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like almost like shame level worthy of how much she crushed us. And it was one of the few games that, like, she was able to beat us at, that and like Mario Party. But
I occasionally get invited by my sons to go play Call of Duty with them or Halo.
Mm-hmm.
And I am what you call fodder. The last time I played with them, I had one kill, and I was killed 19 times in a Call of Duty.
But hey, you got one.
I got one,
and that probably felt great.
it was probably a grenade blew up. I probably blew myself up with a grenade, and there was somebody next to me. Or
gotcha.
Something.
Yeah,
that's probably what happened. Yeah. I don't know. I just know that some of those games. It's a skill. Right, it's a skill, and they have the skill. They play it, and I do not. And
random question: you had sent me this this Facebook post last week about how Winco is finally actually like
Winco is coming.
Yeah. Winco is actually coming for once.
Mm-hmm.
How long ago was it that you actually told me? Because I don't think you weren't allowed to say on the air.
I have known that Winco was coming for probably 3 months.
Yeah. How long? Like, why but do you think I was it took
sworn,
so long?
I was sworn to secrecy.
Yeah.
Because it wasn't, it's funny because it was a done deal, but it wasn't a done deal.
Yeah.
And actually, that's still where it stands. They still have to approve it. Now, my wife said one of the reasons Winco, I don't know if you noticed lately, Winco has actually gone online and said, we need your support.
Yes.
So we can get this approved. The reason for that is they're building right across from Brio. And I think they're feeling like the Brio residents are going to say, hey, wait a minute. We don't want a busy grocery store right here.
Are you? I get it. But at the same time, that convenience, man, just being able to walk just across the street to go to like a really good grocery store. I don't know.
Yeah. So it's going to be interesting. But yes, I found out through my wife's job that I'd known about Winco coming in for quite some time. But again, I was sworn to secrecy. And contrary to popular belief, I can keep a secret.
Yes, you can.
I did keep a secret. I didn't want to keep a secret. It even came up a couple times in Washington City Council meeting, but it came up as, okay, they're still applying for a permit. It's still not a done deal. So even then I couldn't really say much.
Right.
But and then one of our colleagues here at work was able to kind of break the news officially the other day, and congratulations to him. But I will say this, I've known about it a long time.
Was it DJ?
It was the guy that gets a lot of hits.
It's DJ. I wonder if he has a picture of a surprise person on his
does.
Oh, you better. Yeah, he's always good at doing that.
You listen to the Andy Griffin Show. A couple of other. This one we knew intuitively. We knew this, right? But I'm going to read the story on the Wire today. A new study says that more than 3,600 food contact chemicals, end up in the human body. The chemicals enter the food during the manufacturing, processing, packaging, and storage of foods. Dozens of these chemicals that go on to be detected in the body are known to cause cancer, genetic mutation, reproductive issues, and other health concerns. The study is published in the Journal of Exposure Science and Environmental Epidemiology. I don't know that journal, but I can tell you this. We were under the impression, all of us, that the FDA had our backs. The FDA was making sure that chemicals that were harmful to us were not going to make it to us.
But that isn't necessarily the case.
Not true
at
all. Now, FDA caught the biggies, right? You know, oh, you want to put lead in baby powder? No. Okay, they caught the big ones. And we should be grateful for that, right? Because if you go to some other countries, they don't have a government agency that keeps an eye on their food for them.
But there are some stuff that they okayed, but we shouldn't have okayed them because we didn't know that much about them.
And I would submit to you, they knew that there was a problem.
Okay.
I think they knew, and they were like, first of all, there's big bucks involved, right? If Oscar Mayer or Kraft or one of these big old food conglomerates says, we need you to pass this, I'm not saying there are bribes. I'm not going to allege that on the radio. But there was a lot of pressure for the FDA to say, so, you know, the plastic you put your bologna in causes cancer. Big deal. The bologna's fine. And that's kind of how I feel like what has happened.
They're like, oh, no, they're consuming the food, not the packaging. The packaging doesn't do anything.
Yeah, yeah. The other day, my son brought a drink for me to a ball game we were doing.
Mm-hmm.
And he brought me two. I drank one of them. The other one I didn't drink. So I'm like, well, I'll just stick it in my truck, and I'll have an emergency bottle water for whenever I need one, maybe the next game or whatever. And he said, well, haven't you heard about, you know, what happens to water bottles if you leave them in a warm environment?
Ah, yeah.
And I was like, yeah, I heard something, but I didn't really think about it. He goes, well, don't leave the water bottle in your truck. Because if you're sitting out and it's a 100-degree day,
then the plastic melts into
the plastic
water.
Seeps into the water, and this water becomes pretty darn harmful to the point where it could cause you, if not immediate harm, long-term harm, cancer, et cetera.
Yeah.
So
that's why when I was in my camping days, I know, rare.
I was going to say, you camped?
Only to get my merit badge. Yeah. Only to get my camping merit badge.
Did you make Eagle?
I almost did. Okay. I made it to life.
That's good.
And I was actually working on an Eagle project, but my project didn't get approved. Then someone did the project a few years later, and it was the same one as mine, and they got approved. But that's a different story. But
interesting,
yeah. My mom would always tell me whenever we went on camping trips and my mom was helping me pack my backpack, she would always make sure that I didn't get plastic bottles of water because she knew I'd be hiking out in the heat and I would heat up and she didn't want me drinking plastic. But that was kind of before that was all kind of coming to light. Or at least it wasn't quite as, like, in your face all the time about how bad that was. So my mom was just paranoid.
Yeah, well, and she was right. And, I you know, seriously, we all intuitively knew, right?
Yeah.
Didn't we? We all knew that this stuff was not good for us. And it wasn't even necessarily the food. Although doctors tell us, you know, processed meats and things like that, they're kind of bad for you, too. But then if you throw into the processing process, what that article just said, chemicals are entering into the food during the, not just packaging, but the manufacturing, the processing, the package, and the storage of the foods, then you start going, man, oh man, what have I been ingesting all these years?
Yeah.
I mean, we grew up, me too, but you especially in a generation of, that's mostly what all you eat is processed foods.
Oh, right? 100%.
Yeah. I mean, that's life.
On top of that, it's like in order to get like your, I mean, it's like, okay, well then buy organic. Okay. I would love to if they were cheaper.
Yeah. Buy organic. It's only twice the price.
Well, it's so funny. You're like, how is organic? I've always wondered this. How is organic more expensive if less things are done to it?
Yeah. Yeah. Because they can. It's like if you try to go on a diet, and you know this, you've been trying to lose weight. Everything that you would say you want to make a good choice. Okay, instead of buying coleslaw that's covered in mayo and stuff, I want to buy just the cabbage by itself in a package and leave the mayo out.
Yeah.
Oh, wait, it costs more?
Yeah.
It doesn't have mayo in it, but it costs more? Or if you want to buy a protein bar, or if you want to, instead of a cookie, or if you want to buy, you know, a protein shake instead of a hamburger. Yeah. It all costs so much more. It makes, well, trying to be healthy pretty difficult.
I wonder if that's also one of the reasons why we have such a high obesity rating. The biggest reason starts with an M, ends with a Donald's. But
you left the K out, but
well,
that's good.
I didn't like the sound of the K Donald's.
All right, we got to take a commercial break. I think Jack's going to join us here in just a couple of minutes. We'll be right back.
Wake up with the news and information you can trust. This is the Andy Griffin Show on News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU, Southern Utah's News Talk Leader.
Welcome back, everybody. It's 9:35 on KDXU. I think Jack just got here, and we'll get him all mic'd up here in just a second. I did want to take a minute and talk a little bit about Suicide Prevention Month. September is Suicide Prevention Month. First of all, I want to Chris Stewart, who was our congressman for quite a while, was instrumental in getting a national suicide hotline, and they had a hotline, but he was instrumental in getting it reduced to a 3-number call that anybody in mental crisis can call at any time, and it's 988. That's the suicide prevention hotline, and it took a little while. It took like a year to get it implemented, but Stewart had an idea that we have this not manned with people to talk to. He actually wanted to get real doctors, real mental health professionals manning the suicide hotline. And so he did. It took, like I said, it took like a year to implement, but it's there now. And if you, have a suicide situation, a mental crisis situation, please call 988. One of the things that, and right up front, I will tell everyone, I lost my older brother to suicide, and it's been a couple of decades now. But, there isn't a number amount of money I would give to have him back and to have to reverse that whole thing that happened. But it happened. But people have got to understand that, and my brother was about 40 years old. They've got to understand that everybody thinks suicide and they think about the teenager, right? The teenager, oh, we got to be careful and be sensitive. The largest demographic of people who commit suicide are males age 40 to 60. And then the second largest are males over the age of 70. The teen suicide is it's like eighth on the list of the demographics that come in. Now, it's heartbreaking, of course. If a 15-year-old kills himself, of course, it's incredibly heartbreaking. But isn't it also heartbreaking, maybe more so, if a 42-year-old father of four does it? Or the 70-year-old who has, you know, 14 grandchildren does it? So I guess, you know, the thing I'm getting at here is it happens. And it happens to mental crisis happens to people of all ages, more likely males than females, but it happens. So make yourself available. Look for the warning signs, some of which are things like, you know, talking about death, maybe talking about the pain or hopelessness that they're feeling guilt, shame, or anger, feeling like they're a burden to others. Look for the warning signs and then just be there for somebody. You don't have to do anything special. Just be there for them. It's actually not really that hard to help someone who's having a mental crisis. If you can get them over the first 10 minutes, usually things are way, way better. Jack is here. Hi, Jack.
Hi. How you doing, buddy?
Good to see you.
Well, we made it.
Life's treating you well?
Yeah.
We had a little miscommunication, but we're together now.
Yeah.
Stonehenge, you got that's your
trip?
That's
for my trip.
Trip, yeah.
To England, yeah. Last month.
Did you get a big head while you were at Stonehenge?
No.
There were several big heads there, though.
There was a lot of big heads. That's more like Easter Island.
Oh, yeah, Easter Island.
Yeah, they're just
Stonehenge are just rocks.
Standing rocks. Yeah.
What's that all about?
You know, it's really interesting. I got an interesting suicide story, I guess.
Okay.
Did you hear about John Bon Jovi?
Yeah. Oh, what a great story.
Yeah. So
he's filming a video, right? Uh-huh. On a bridge. And I'll let you take it from here.
Well, and all I saw was on the Mexican TV because my wife watches that.
Okay.
And it was there. This person was standing on the
outside of the railing,
yeah. You know, waiting for the courage to do, I guess, jump off. And he comes walking along and I engage in a conversation and he grabs him and pulls him over the rail. And
yeah.
Can you imagine being your life saved by John Bon Jovi?
Yeah.
Wow. You know, we always thought he was pretty cool.
Maybe he grabbed her and said, "It's my life."
Was it a woman?
Bad joke.
Was it a woman?
Okay.
So, that was pretty cool.
Now, I have a lot of, I really like John Bon Jovi. He, unlike a lot of other rockers, he wasn't a druggie. He's a guy who has a good head on his shoulders.
Yeah.
And, I don't know that another rocker maybe could have done it. And I don't think they wouldn't have, but I think he was the perfect guy.
Well, he showed a lot of courage in the moment.
Yeah.
When you think about it.
Yeah.
Because that's not something you plan for. And that tells you a lot about his character. You know, that was a cool story, though.
Very good story. Yeah. If you haven't, search for it online, folks, if you want to read the story about John Bon Jovi helping save this woman's life. It's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Pretty cool story. Because it was just a matter of being in the right place at the right time.
Yeah, that was weird, right too. Thing. Yeah. You know, how often does that happen? You know?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So we were talking a minute ago about something we all knew, Jack. I was talking with Stockton about this. Processed foods, right? We're all worried about what's in the foods, the processed foods. And, you know, but it's actually part of the problem is not what's in them, but what is seeping into them through the manufacturing, the packaging, the storage. We get, you know, if you buy a pack of, ham, processed ham, well, guess what? It's sitting in that plastic container for months at a time and weeks anyway. And then, you know, you're getting all these little chemicals inside of you.
Yeah. What happens at my house is I buy it, I get into it a couple times, and then it expires before I get it.
Yeah, and then you're like, do I eat it anyway? Man, I paid a lot of money for this thing. And then you smell it. Does it smell okay? Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, if you look at what is it that we want out of our lives? You know, we want quality of life. We want to be able to do the things we want to do. We want to look good. We want to have healthy days, more healthy days than sick days by far. You know, you don't want to have down days. And are these foods, is it what's in the food? Is it the fact that we eat quantities and calories more than maybe our body needs? Mm-hmm. You know, I can tell you, me for sure, I for sure ate a lot more calories than I need to. And plus, you know, the food choices, I'm a sugarholic, you know, there was alcoholism in my family, in my aunts and uncles and that. And I suppose I may have that gene, but man, it turned into a sugar gene for me. Well, so I don't know, you know, it's.
There's a certain Mexican restaurant in town that has these sugared, this sweet pork.
Oh, yeah.
I happen to be addicted to that.
I've heard about that place. Yeah. It can get addicting for sure.
Unbelievably good.
But, I would say, you know, are we living longer now than we were a generation ago? You know?
We are living longer.
But are we living healthier? That's a good question.
Yeah, that's the thing. The medical industry has gotten so good at extending our lives.
Mm-hmm.
But higher than ever is the frequency of dementia and Alzheimer's and mental diseases.
Yeah. Well, and again, a generation ago, I mean, my dad was a chain smoker. So, you know, it wasn't uncommon for everybody, not everybody, but every other. I was watching this TV show the other night and it was set in the mid-1950s, and the guy goes to the doctor, and the doctor lights up a cigarette.
Totally, yeah. 9 out of 10 doctors recommend Marlboro, you know? And it's like, what? Wait. And you see the picture of the guy doing appendectomy or something, surgery, and he reaches over and takes a puff of smoke and puts it back in the ashtray and keeps going. Yeah. And I don't know if that really happened, but, I mean, that was the way things were when we were kids. Yeah. Smoking was incredible.
They used to have cigarette vending machines at the gas stations here in town.
Yeah, you could.
Dad would give me,
10-year-old
dad
could
give
buy
me a dollar and quarter and say, go give me some cigarettes.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. Now, you and I both went to Europe. I don't know how your experience was as far as smoking, but I can tell you that in Amsterdam, in France, in Germany, in Switzerland, a lot of people smoke.
Yeah, I think non-Americans smoke more than Americans do. I think we've done a really good job.
Here's the number for you.
Utah's, I think, is even better.
Yeah.
You know.
Somebody asked me what percentage of Europeans smoked, and I was like, I don't know the number. It seemed like half.
Uh-huh.
But in America, in the United States of America, right now, still 11% of Americans, roughly 50 to 60 million Americans, admit to smoking on a regular basis.
Oh.
11%.
I bet that's a smaller percentage in Utah.
Yeah, probably.
That's why we don't see it as much here.
Probably.
You know, because we go to Mexico a lot, my wife and I, and there are a lot of Mexican folks smoke more than we do, at least that I am used to seeing. And you should see the cigarette packages. You think ours, you have that Surgeon General's warning on it?
Yeah.
They have photographs of diseased lungs. The organs, you know, and everything. Yeah. It's just disgusting. And
it doesn't seem to work. Does it?
No, I don't think. I don't know. It works for me. I can tell you that. I don't even want to touch the damn pack.
let me get a quick break. And when we come back, I want to talk about Gen Z. There's a class at Yale called Psychology and the Good Life, or as it's colloquially known as the Happiness Class. It's drawing record numbers of students that want to take this class. And the author of this story online says, I wonder why. We'll talk about that when we come back.
All the latest news, weather, traffic, and sports, just like you like them. You're waking up with the Andy Griffin Show on News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU, Southern Utah's news talk leader.
Welcome back, 948 on KDXU. Hours going quick. I did want to tell a quick story. So Jack and I both recently got back from trips to Europe. I was in Netherlands, Germany, France, Switzerland. He was in Scotland?
England, Wales, Scotland.
Yeah. So, the other day, we're trying to do the whole flip blitz at our house and get some turf put in. And so I was like, man, we're getting bids and trying to figure this out. And I was like, hey, I know a guy who used to be a landscaper, Gil Almquist, mm-hmm. who is the current county commissioner.
Sure.
7 o'clock in the evening, I'm like, you know what? I'll just call Gil real quick and get his, maybe he's not a landscaper anymore, but he knows all these guys, and then maybe get a reference. So I give him a call and I'm like, mm-hmm. and I think maybe he'll let it go to voicemail or maybe I'll have to text him, whatever. But he answers on the first ring.
Oh, okay.
I'm like, hey, Gil, what's going on? He says, hey, how are you? And he sounded a little bit sleepy. I'm like, I'm good. What's going on? He goes, well, I'm here in Germany. Now, Germany is 8 hours ahead of the United States.
7 in the evening?
7 in the evening was 3 o'clock in the morning where he was.
Oh, my God. Why didn't he even answer the phone?
And I said, you're in Germany? Isn't it like 3 o'clock in the morning there? He goes, yeah. I said, why are you answering the phone? He says, well... He said, I just got here yesterday, and I'm still on the U.S., Utah time zone. And she says, I'm not sleeping. And I hear his wife say in the back, I'm not sleeping either. This is ridiculous. And not mad at me, but just the fact that they're still on that other schedule. And anyway, Gil and I talked for 31 minutes at 3 o'clock in the morning in Germany.
Oh, no.
And we had a nice chat, and he was very, very kind, and he referred me to some landscapers and stuff.
Good.
But, he was actually supposed to be on today, but he's still in Europe, and he'll be back, and I think he's going to be on next Wednesday.
He stayed an extra day. You cost him a day, man.
I know. I feel bad, but that's a real thing. One of the things they told us when we got to Europe, or we're going to Europe, they said, do not resist the urge. Do not, when you get there, go into your hotel room and take a 3 or 4 hour nap. It'll screw you up the whole trip. Stay awake as long as you can. Mm-hmm. And we did. We stayed awake till bed, 9 or 10 o'clock at night there, and then got some sleep, and it helped us to adjust to the time. Although we were jet lagged for a few days.
Yeah, you just can't get over that. But it's weird. So, it's weird.
All right, I want to tell you about this story, Jack, if I can get to the right page here. This is so Yale's been around. Yale is one of our oldest universities. 316 years Yale has been a university before our country was even a country. They've been teaching kids, and they have never, ever had as many students want to get into one particular class. The class is called, this is the official name of it, Psychology and the Good Life. But the kids call it the Happiness Class.
Okay.
Undergraduates attending Yale that year would have been born, would have been born right around 2000. Among the first generation Z students to darken the doors of an Ivy League university older than the United States itself. According to Professor Laurie Santos, those students faced a, quote, mental health crisis at Yale and on campuses across the United States. To combat it, Santos created the course, advocated for positive psychology and behavioral change, and clearly there was an appetite for it. According to another doctor there on Yale, she said, quote, Gen Z is the loneliest, most anxious, depressed, pessimistic, helpless, and fearful generation on record. They are searching for something, for happiness. And, you know, yesterday I read about this young girl who had everything that used to give her joy, playing sports, hanging out with friends, dancing, didn't give her joy anymore. And then she had put her phone down for a few days and found out that the joy was coming back because the phone was put away.
Mm.
And so, yeah, I mean, you and I talked about banning cell phones in school last week. Yep. But we got to figure out, Jack, how to have these phones be. Yeah, I mean, they're not going away, but we got to figure out a way to not have them be so central in our lives.
Did I hear a thing that the Surgeon General wanted to put a warning on cell phones or social media?
I haven't heard that, but yeah. I'm not against it.
Yeah, yeah. It's so weird because if you listen, I'm a big fan of Dr. Jordan Peterson. He said stuff like this, we don't have experience with nearly enough time to know.
We don't.
These social experiments that we're doing to ourselves and the social media and everything that's going on. I can tell you that one of the things I look forward to when I get out of town and go on these vacations and that is, you know, I don't do the phone as much. I do Facebook a little bit. I think I post on Facebook. Mostly to let my family know how my trip's going,
I saw some great pictures of you.
Also to give myself a record for future, so that I'll have that to look back on and the memories and in that. It's kind of a journal, I guess, experience, if you will. But I think that I think the phone can be a very big thing, because I have been in this hole of the Harris Trump thing and the surveys, what do they call it? The polls. You know, about how good Harris is doing. And I think to myself, are there really that many idiots out there? And that's the part I don't get. The part I have is I think I'm so smart. I'll say that out loud. Okay. And my wife can tell you, I think that too. that I don't understand someone who doesn't agree with me all the time. I just, you know, cause I think everything through all the time. It's just funny.
Yeah.
Yeah. But you know, you get that. You look at somebody and say, well, how can you possibly think this person's going to be a good president? Yeah. Why would you think that? But what has that got to do with happiness? I think it might have everything to do with it, because you don't have to, if you put the phone away, all you can concern yourself with is right what presents in front of you, you know?
Yeah.
And you know, life's pretty good.
It is.
Especially here.
Yeah.
Oh, you know,
yeah.
I don't know about Yale, but, you know.
We live in the greatest place on earth, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And I haven't been a lot of places. I've been a few places. You've been to maybe a few more, but it's so good to come back to Utah's Dixie and just be here and go, you know what? This really is the best place on earth.
It's a great place. It's a great place to call home. And we're so very fortunate to live in a place like this. You know, it's sad for me. I have a double feeling about the how fast our community is growing, you know, and the things that come along with that. From the economic point of view, you know, you can make a living, you can, you know, there's money to raise a family, and hopefully the kids will want to stick around. But on the other hand, you know, it's not Mayberry anymore.
Yeah.
You know?
I was thinking about that when Brandon Hansen was on talking about the price of homes and how, you know, with this big golf tournament that's coming, things are just going to keep going up. There's going to be people in Cleveland that are going to look at, you know, the drone shots of our beautiful place where we live and go, I think I want to go there.
Yeah.
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 But I was thinking, you know, what's going to happen is a lot of us are going to be what I call backdoor millionaires, where I bought my house for $400,000. It was a stretch. It hurt. It was hard to buy it for that much 5 years ago. But you know what? The house is worth seven now. And after Black Desert and after what's happening here, I'm going to become a backdoor millionaire. That house can be worth $1 million in a few years.
And then, well, what's going to happen to the price when interest rates go down to in the threes and the low fours?
Yeah.
Then what's going to happen? I mean, more and more people will come into the market, and that price will actually go up even more.
Yeah.
You know, when you think about it like that. And that's just my opinion. I don't know for a fact, but yeah, we'll see. But as far as happiness is concerned, I think our local university ought to do a class like that.
Yeah.
You know, why not? And you're right. These kids are the most whatever, you know.
And the thing about it, I don't want to be a hypocrite and say, I don't use this phone. So, you know, I do use my phone. I use my phone a lot. It's an integral part of my work. Personality, my work persona. It has to be. That's modern times. Yeah. But I don't use it much at home at all.
Yeah.
And it's not important to me at home, except for if my wife needs to get, you know, hey, honey, pick up some eggs, you know, while you're out or whatever. But so I don't want to be a hypocrite and say I don't use it. But I think we've got to figure out, Jack, sometime in the next few years, a way to make it not be as important as it is. And it's funny because the Apple and Samsung and those guys, they're actually fighting the opposite. They want it to be more important. They want us to be dependent on this every second of every day.
Yeah.
And, yeah. You know, it's already replaced our cameras, and it's already replaced our phones, and it's already replaced our calculators, and it's already replaced our, you know, our encyclopedias, everything.
Yeah.
So it's already,
well, I think it's going to have to be, it's like every tool that we have in our world. I mean, we have to learn to use it in moderation and with wisdom and with a certain amount of, you know, screen time is good and too much is bad. And you have to just, you know, create limits, especially if you're a parent for your children. And I'll admit, I mean, I wasn't that good with limiting screen time with my girls, and I could have probably done a better job, but
it requires some self-discipline.
It requires
as a parent,
a lot.
As a parent, you have to tell your kids, this is not going to happen in my house. You are not going to be on your phone you know, 9 hours a day. You're not going to be on the phone every second that you're home.
Well, I took my girls to Yellowstone. We rented a motorhome about 5 years ago, and I took all three of my girls and my wife, and we lived in that motorhome for a week. And it was tight. It was tight.
Yeah.
And the kids were on the phone. I mean, we're parked in front of Old Faithful. And I said, okay, this is going to stop. I'm going to pay you to stay off your phones for the rest of this trip. And guess what? They wanted money. They wanted the money. And they did it. To their credit, they did it.
And to your credit, you paid up and got them off the phone.
I got them off the phone. And we went and saw Old Faithful.
Nice. We're out of time. Jack, thanks for coming in today.
Thanks for having me.
We're back tomorrow. Thanks for listening.